Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Forum, where science comes to socialize. Coming to you on behalf of the Institute on Science for Global Policy, I'm Aubrey, and I'm joined today by Cleo, one of my usual partners, as well as a special guest, my wonderful science communication intern, Diana. Diana actually wrote today's episode, so that's exciting.
Hi, everyone. This is Diana here. It's nice to speak to you all. I'm an undergraduate at the Tec de Monterrey in Guadalajara, Mexico, studying biotechnology. And I first came in contact with the Forum as a collaborator on the virtual conference SymBioLive.
Right, and I promptly snatched her up as an intern afterwards. Well, we're happy to have you on the show with us today, Diana, and I personally would like to thank you since I know how much you've been helping Aubrey with our outreach activities, which means she's been harassing Daniela and me significantly less. Hey, I don't harass. I just, you know, forcefully suggest. Anyway, let's get started today now that we've finished our introductions. How about we start with a simple question? All right, so what were your favorite toys as a child?
Well, as embarrassing as it is today, I was totally that girl who loved playing with Barbie dolls. So that I could do that for hours.
Well, I was more of a video game fan. But I have to admit that whenever I visit my cousins, we occasionally played with Legos. There was something about building anything out of bricks that I really enjoyed.
Well, all I remember really was having an obscenely large pile of stuffed animals, especially horses. But hey, I'm pretty glad one of you mentioned building, because it leads into a theme of our show today, synthetic biology.
To put it simply, synthetic biology describes the use of genome synthesis technologies that can make new organisms with predetermined functionalities. But I know that sounds a little complicated, so why don't we let the biotechnology student try her hand at some science communication? Can you break it down for us, Diana?
Of course. Basically, scientists can use synthetic biology principles as tools to construct or alter the genetic blueprint of, say, a microorganism, so it can produce useful substances, like insulin or even antibiotics.
I think I see where Aubrey was going with the whole building analogy then. The genes that make up this beneficial substance-producing organism sort of act like Legos, right? Scientists could, for instance, build their own antibiotic-producing bacteria by selecting the appropriate genes.
Yeah, and it's simple conceptually, and maybe even relatively simple for some researchers experimentally, but antibiotics themselves are facing some problems right now, specifically antibiotic resistance. One approach for using synthetic biology, then, might be to fight off said antibiotic resistance. According to a debate held at the ISGP conference, Emerging and Persistent Infectious Diseases, Focus on Antimicrobial Resistance, our presenter, Dr. Takano, and his co-author, Dr. Breitling, claimed that antibiotic resistance is not only a major international issue in and of itself, but pharmaceutical companies have also reduced their efforts in finding new varieties. To give you some context, Dr. Takano and Dr. Breitling are both professors from the Manchester Institute of Biotechnology, and their position paper from this conference was titled Antimicrobial Resistance, a New Drug Discovery Perspective Using Synthetic Biology.
Reduced efforts in antimicrobial discovery and development can be largely attributed to the low profit-to-cost ratio and overall difficulty of the task. But Dr. Takano and Dr. Breitling proposed using synthetic biology to address this problem.
Hold up, though. Let's tease out these problems associated with antibiotic resistance a bit more, since, you know, they're incredibly important.
Wait, can I do it? This is kind of my academic interest.
Oh, absolutely. It's all yours.
Okay, so you see, antibiotics are relatively new in the grand scheme of time, since they weren't available from the general market until the 1940s. And back then, many bacteria didn't exhibit antibiotic resistance mechanisms because, well, they haven't been exposed to antibiotics. However, once antibiotics were introduced in the scene, any bacteria that were not killed by the antibiotic reproduced and made more bacteria that wouldn't succumb to the antibiotic. So in isolated incidents, only antibiotic-resistant strains of bacteria were left. Not to mention the fact that bacteria also have other mechanisms to pass these traits, like resistance. But maybe we'll get to that later.
So when it comes to these resistant bacteria and how they've become prevalent, well, this is all sort of like a filter or a survival game, right? Since bacteria that were sensitive to those antibiotics died off, the survivors were the ones that got to produce offspring, which were also resistant to the antibiotic.
Not only that, but progressively, with the use of newer antibiotics on those original resistant bacteria, the survivors ended up leaving behind offspring resistant to the first antibiotic and the new one. And so you could imagine how this cycle might continue with any new antibiotics entering the market. Now, several newly developed antimicrobials are already ineffective against a large fraction of hospital-acquired infections.
That's super alarming, in the sense that some sort of, I don't know, super bacterium could emerge. The existence of microbe resistance to all available antimicrobial drugs is not only a major fear and threat, but doctors argue that it could return us to a pre-antibiotic state. That said, we mainly fear common bacterial foes like E. coli, Salmonella, and Shigella becoming resistant.
Wait, though. Pre-antibiotic state? Like when the common cold or minor scratches could kill us?
Precisely.
Talk about time traveling gone wrong.
Yeah, for sure. And bringing it back to a comment we made a little earlier, it's been observed that as antimicrobial resistance increases, the quantity of new antibiotics decreases.
Listening to this, it might sound like the odds are not in our favor. But I find it hard to believe that we are not producing any antibiotics. There are going to be some in the pipeline, right?
Well, in 2009, only two new antibiotics entered the market. Tilavinsin and ceftaroline. I'll just let that sink in for a second. Two.
Apparently, it's no longer economically attractive to develop new antibiotics. The drugs are taken for only a few weeks, and even if priced higher than usual, the costs of development, clinical tests, regulations, and marketing are higher. Also, traditional methods for searching for and discovering antibiotics have lost effectiveness.
So how would synthetic biology help in this? I mean, sure, someone could construct a bacterium capable of producing antibiotics. But if all the microbes are already resistant, then...
Right. Actually, their approach is based on the fact that a vast majority of existing and potentially future antibiotics are produced by other microbes in their own genetic assembly lines. This is actually something I didn't know, that antibiotics commonly come from chemicals produced as defense mechanisms by microorganisms or fungi. In these species, the chemical is meant to limit the growth of other organisms that might compete for food and space.
To put it more family-friendly, when Aubrey says genetic assembly lines, she's referring to those genes in the bacteria's DNA that are responsible for making antibiotic production possible in the organism. So isolating and studying these assembly lines and then replicating their antibiotic production via synthetic biology could help us search for new antimicrobials. Or we even design a similar molecule that could keep the bacteria from reproducing.
It was also pointed out by debaters that synthetic biology has the benefit that it can be heavily used in academic research, moving the antibiotic discovery work from large pharmaceutical companies to academia and small biotech companies.
So instead of relying on a few big pharma companies, there could be many small research groups working in this neglected field.
Right, and here we can even invoke genome sequencing, or figuring out the order of the nucleotide bases actually present in a string of DNA.
Wait, bases? I know we've talked about DNA and genomes on the forum before, but I'm not sure we've ever gotten that specific.
Oh yeah, quick note for our listeners. DNA structure is made up of four molecules called nucleotides that arrange themselves within the DNA in a specific way. These nucleotides can be identified by what base they contain. In this case, base is used to describe a component of the molecule for fancy chemistry reasons. But all you need to know for now is that the bases are abbreviated by four letters, A, T, C, and G.
Yeah, have you ever heard of the movie Gattaca? That movie title actually comes from these nucleotide bases. Seriously, check it out. Gattaca is spelled G-A-T-T-A-C-A. That's no coincidence.
As it turns out, we can understand these nucleotide bases as a genome's alphabet, if you will. And the order in which these bases are presented in a DNA strand is key to identifying and studying gene functions. And if you guess that certain groups of A, T, Cs, and Gs make up these genes, you'll be right. Like Aubrey mentioned, determining the order of bases in DNA is called genome sequencing. This technology has existed for a while now. I think it's older than me.
But to clarify, sequencing is figuring out the order of those A's, T's, C's, and G's, but not yet finding the function of the gene, right?
Right. And now that we have our DNA 101 out of the way, A large fraction of antimicrobial compounds produced by bacteria are invisible when we screen for them, because the genes that produce these antimicrobials are not always active. Much like your own genes, they're only active under certain conditions.
Since not all processes and defenses are always needed by the bacteria, they have the luxury of turning genes off or on depending on conditions or threats they encounter.
And since the genes are only active when needed, there's a whole other challenge of basically awakening these antibiotic-producing pathways when we want them to be functioning, so that we can produce the antibiotics on a large scale using synthetic biology.
But the way we're talking about it here might make it sound like this process of antibiotic discovery and then production would be trivial using synthetic biology. But it's definitely not. There's a step-by-step process required here. All the details don't work themselves out magically. Once the new antibiotics produced by bacteria are discovered, or I guess essentially exposed, there's a lot that needs to be done before actual antimicrobial production can take place.
So how would this step-by-step process going from bacteria-based antibiotic discovery to synthetic biology-based mass production actually look, you may ask? Well, once researchers are able to expose the genome and gene functions of however many bacteria species, they then have to identify which parts of the DNA, genes, are responsible for the synthesis of any antimicrobials. Next, they have to isolate those genes and physically put them in artificially engineered systems to activate the genes, kind of like a DNA holder that can be accepted by a different bacterial host. If you've ever heard of a plasmid, for instance, this would be an example of one of these quote-unquote DNA holders. Whichever type of gene activation system is selected, it must, of course, be safe and reliable for antibiotic production, which would finally lead to producing and isolating the antibiotic.
For those of you looking for a little context, the latter part of this step-by-step process looks a lot like how we make synthetic insulin for diabetics. You might be familiar with the concept of modifying a bacterial host so that its DNA includes a gene for insulin production. This is really the same idea, minus the compound discovery part.
Hey, I haven't even thought of that. Good point. But when it comes to using bacteria to make antibiotics, scientists also have to characterize the new compounds and repeat the procedure as necessary to confirm the process. Lather, rinse, and repeat. But it's also important to choose a safe host that maximizes efficiency and is, of course, industrially relevant.
But even so, debaters pointed out that the barriers for industrial application of this sort of technology are actually less problematic than other fields, even if there are certain concerns regarding the ethical implications of creating what would technically be considered new life forms. Shout out to episode 36 of the forum on this very topic.
And just like it did when we talked new life forms in episode 36, this all sounds very heavy. Bioethics, anyone? And we haven't even gotten to the policy problems yet.
Now that you mention problems, developing funding mechanisms to finance this work is another main concern, as always.
Money doesn't grow on trees.
But a paper does, though.
I don't think that's how the economy works.
I know, but one can dream, right?
Well, moving on. You know how companies require different perspectives and people with varying areas of expertise to function? Well, so does synthetic biology, because it includes microbiology, chemistry, and other science and engineering disciplines.
Even if all necessary areas of expertise were covered, international connections would still be necessary to maximize the benefits of synthetic biology here.
Yeah, that was a huge point. Experts are usually located all over the place.
Yeah, not that we're experts or anything, but Cleo and I are located in the US and Diana's over in Mexico. And our typical occupant of the third co-host seat, Daniela, is over in Europe. You know, just as a case in point.
So in accordance with this call for international connectivity, debaters stated that policymakers need to stimulate more international collaborations, and cross-country funding initiatives are also needed. Multilateral initiatives and funding from a single source are preferred over bilateral approaches and separate sources of funding.
They also pointed out that it can actually be quite difficult to get funding for the projects we've been discussing today because they're considered high-risk research.
High-risk research doesn't mean dangerous, I hope.
No, they meant that even though innovative projects like funding new antibiotics using synthetic biology are crucial, funding is frequently funneled to near-market, application-ready projects, and that's not really what we've been describing today.
But even if we figure out the funding situation, we then need to figure out how to translate between new technology developed in a lab and industrial application. Things can be very different when moving from small to large scale.
Definitely. And while the debaters agreed that close industry-academia ties are essential here, they thought that instead of prioritizing applied research for immediate industrial application, what should be prioritized is enhancing industry's awareness of new technologies.
A very different approach towards funding was also pointed out, the use of charity campaigns.
Imagine a charity for synthetic biology. Though maybe the charity would actually be for antimicrobial development to counter a specific illness. We have seen charity campaigns for AIDS and cancer, and I mean, who remembers the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge? But we haven't seen them for countering resistant E. coli infections, for instance.
Wouldn't that be different? I wonder if people would support an initiative like that for antibiotic resistance. I'd like to ask my very first question to the listeners. Can I do that?
Do it.
All right. So, according to the conference debaters, as well as some other sources, antimicrobial resistant E. coli and other bacteria have become worrisome, especially as they continue to spread their resistance. There have been even rumblings in the news recently about existing superbugs resistant to over 25 antibiotics and
Okay, try taking a breath. Let's keep it short and sweet.
Sorry. So, to our audience, would you support a charity-based effort to fight E. coli or other super bacteria, or even a sickness localized in your region using synthetic biology?
Send your answer to Diana's question to @ISGPForum on Twitter or on Facebook at facebook.com/ISGPForum.
Do you think they'll send us answers? As if I wasn't nervous enough to actually speak on the
No, you're
podcast. I mean.
doing great. So let's keep it moving. Where were we?
Okay, so back to the debate. A common sentiment was that synthetic biology is a platform technology requiring both public and private sector investment, especially when it comes to creating new antimicrobial compounds.
But wait a minute, can we do a reality check real quick? Why should we be focusing on developing even more antimicrobials if bacteria will just manage to adapt anyway?
Well, according to our debaters, the key is to discover and produce new antibiotics fast enough that we'll ideally always have effective ones on hand. They also agreed that even if certain antibiotics, even new ones, do become obsolete, we still need to fight off the bacteria somehow. When there are thousands of antimicrobials yet to be discovered, this seems like our best bet.
Although these new compounds would eventually be susceptible to resistance, it was argued that synthetic biology can identify new compounds much faster than existing approaches. All in all, the inevitability of resistance to synthetically created compounds can't discourage further research.
And in order to alleviate concerns preventing these projects from being funded, it was argued that developing even one new antimicrobial drug with synthetic biology would be really powerful in demonstrating the potential of this technology.
There was also a statement from the debate claiming that synthetic biology is the next industrial revolution for biotechnology, offering opportunities to create new drugs and specific treatments for individual patients.
That sounds huge. However, we can't jump the gun here. Practical development of new antibiotic compounds at the time of this debate were at least 10 years away.
And my chemistry colleagues would totally have my head if I didn't mention that organic chemistry approaches have been producing new compounds for the past 20 years. But results have been limited compared to the theoretical possibilities afforded by synthetic biology.
There is one thing we've been overlooking, though, a global context. The debaters happen to agree that both the US and Europe are facing austerity measures when it comes to these technologies, meaning that funding for these sorts of proposals is unlikely to be favored by policymakers.
And without a specific product as an outcome, it was agreed that investment in synthetic biology can be difficult to justify. But then again, there was a charity perspective.
You sound overly eager about charity.
I mean, I have to admit that I've never given that approach much thought before. But what if I started my own charity campaign?
To support synthetic biology? Well, now that you mention it, once I saw this banner that was asking for donations in the sketchiest way.
What made you skeptical?
Banner looked suspicious, and I don't think it's normal to ask people for their credit card and social security numbers. If you're going to start a Synbio charity, I don't recommend doing that. Pro tip number one.
Well, I think we're off track again.
My bad. I'm still new at this.
It's all good. Okay, so let's say we can tease out the policy side of things. It still wouldn't be super useful if we didn't have the science down pat. Now, we talked a little about the basics of synthetic biology at the beginning of the episode, but now let's explore a few of the scientific specifics when it comes to Synbio, specifically focused on antimicrobial development.
Well, there are two methods of DNA manipulations that can be used to create antimicrobial compounds. High-throughput screening using computer algorithms can identify microbial targets from massive quantities of data, and then design molecules to disrupt the targets.
Or there's the creation of chemically diverse molecular libraries. These would contain new chemical structures not seen in nature that could be tested against microbial targets.
It was agreed that designing a specific molecule might not be the best approach, but in any case, a lot could still be learned regarding this new type of drug discovery.
Right. While synthetic biology can identify core sequences in DNA that may give rise to certain beneficial products, it is not yet possible to predict specific functions of products based solely on their sequence. Nonetheless, Synbio has the advantage of creating more diverse, sustainable organic compounds than can be produced by current organic chemistry approaches.
And with the cost of DNA synthesis rapidly decreasing and the synthesis equipment becoming more readily available, antibiotic development via this newer route should become increasingly more cost-effective.
Yeah, but this technological availability doesn't mean synthetic biology will necessarily be used for antibiotic development. I mean, using synthetic biology to create replacements for, I don't know, petroleum products is probably more likely to get attention because of market value.
So, in the end, is there any hope for funding antimicrobial resistance-based Synbio projects?
Well, some government-related relevant funding sources would include the U.S. National Institute of Health, or NIH, the Innovative Medicines Initiative, IMI, and the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, or BARDA.
Hey, at least there's hope, which is a nice note of optimism to end on today.
Totally. So in short, synthetic biology is a platform technology that can be used to more efficiently discover and develop new antimicrobial compounds.
New antimicrobials are critically needed, and current drug development pipelines are simply not producing fast enough. It's suggested that synthetic biology could help rectify this problem.
But the current state of funding for antibiotic resistance-related Synbio projects remains the biggest hurdle to implementation.
And question time.
All right, now we'd like to hear your thoughts. What do you think about using a synthetic biology approach for antimicrobial research and production?
Do you think funding initiatives that surround human health menaces, such as resistance, should be a priority for investors?
Tweet us your thoughts at ISGP Forum or leave us a comment on Facebook at facebook.com/ISGP Forum.
We're happy to answer your questions, and we've also been known to be friendly with the retweets, in case that's any incentive for you. Of course, thank you, Diana, for writing today's episode and coming on to record. You did great.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
And as always, thank you all for socializing with science today, and we'll see you next time right here on the forum.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy, or ISGP, is a nonprofit organization that convenes international meetings bringing together scientists, policymakers, industry leaders, students, and other stakeholders to discuss pertinent scientific issues facing society. The ISGP has no opinions and does not lobby. Therefore, the preceding podcast reflects the views expressed by the presenters and debaters at our conference. For more information, please visit our website at www.scienceforglobalpolicy.org. Thank you.